everyone, and welcome to Scorncast, the reliably random official podcast of the Pop Scorn Pop Culture blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, Pop Scorn's Geek in Chief, and today I'm going to be discussing the upcoming summer movie season with my very special guest, Ghostface Milla, a writer at the Roundtable Music blog. You can read him and download his weekly mixes at www.theroundtableonline.com. Hey, Ghostface.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. Are you ready to get your scorn on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Summer movie style.
So, the popular opinion about last summer is that it sort of has this distinction of being one of the worst summers for movies in recent memory, but I feel like, in retrospect, it wasn't too bad. No summer where we got Toy Story 3, The Kids Are All Right, Inception, Scott Pilgrim. Any summer where we got all those can be called worst anything. But I do think that there were a lot more movies that were completely useless and forgettable than other recent summers. We had Predators, Night and Day, Eat, Pray, Love, Jonah Hex, Sex and the City, Prince of Persia, Charlie St. Cloud, and like, who remembers anything about any of those? Although, there were some really awful ones, too, like Grown Ups, Killers, and The Last Fucking Airbender. But looking at this summer's releases, I don't know about you, but this calendar looks legitimately exciting to me.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm actually pretty excited. I mean, I think usually summers are known as kind of like just like sequels and like derivatives and things that would be, you know, normally just like a so-so movie are just blown out into like epic proportions, so much so that they just like have no soul. But like, I'm looking at like, you know, a list of movies and I think it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I had a really hard time narrowing it down, and that's what we're going to do on this episode of Scorncast. We're going to narrow it down. We're going to name our five most anticipated and our three most dreaded upcoming summer movies. So, Sorry, Thor, Jumping the Broom, and Something Borrowed. You three opened a few days ago. You're not eligible. Ghostface, I know how excited you were about Something Borrowed. We're also going to courageously and probably incorrectly pick what we think will be the top five grossing movies of summer 2011. So let's get started with the good stuff, or the stuff that we desperately are hoping is good. What is your number five pick for most exciting summer movie?
So I'm actually really excited about Friends with Benefits. So I mean, that's my number five, Friends with Benefits. When I first heard about it, I was like, wow, didn't we just go through this? And like, I'm sure that wasn't great, and you know, blah blah blah. But then I watched the trailer, mostly because you sent it to me, and I gotta say, like, it actually looks pretty good. Like, their chemistry and, you know, the jokes and stuff, I think it could be, you know, still kind of predictable, but definitely entertaining. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And, you know, Justin Timberlake, shirtless, you know, I can't really argue.
I'm going to hold my comments for Friends with Benefits because it might be coming up on my either excited about or dreading list. I'm not going to tell you which. But my number five pick is Crazy Stupid Love, which is the comedy with Julianne Moore and Steve Carell and Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, who sort of seems to be doing a Justin Timberlake impression in the movie. I don't know.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, I think you're dead on the money. That movie looks great. That's actually my number four.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, we're moving right along here.
Super excited about it. I think the ensemble is, like, so great. I mean, I love Emma Stone, and I think to see her, you know, with, like, some other, like, pretty good comedic people. I didn't know Ryan Gosling was so funny until I watched this trailer.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like that kind of movie where everything is going to be tied up really neatly in a bow at the end. But it looks really fun. It looks like that one of those really rare comedies where like the jokes in the trailer are actually funny. You're not like dreading seeing this trailer multiple times, even if it's just for that Twilight joke that Julianne Moore has that's really funny. And also, like, for special mention, I just have to say that the trailer seems to be scored with music from my iPod. So, you know, that's one way to get me interested in a movie right there. So that's your number four?
Yeah, that's my number four. What's your number four?
My number four, thanks for asking, is Super 8, which I'm going to guess is probably on your excited about list, but don't tell me right now. I don't know, like, is anyone not really excited when they see this trailer? Maybe you aren't, but J.J. Abrams, I feel like in very few movies, I'm sort of on his side. I'll see pretty much anything he does until he makes something really terrible. Just as far as his event movies go, I love Star Trek. I know he just produced Cloverfield, but I was really into Cloverfield. So I guess I find J.J. Abrams sort of bringing some exciting stuff here. And it seems like it's a big tribute to the Spielberg movies that came out in the 70s and 80s. And those are what I grew up with, so I feel this trailer just gives me a pretty good sense of nostalgia. It makes me happy.
Yeah, I think so. Moving right along, Super 8 is actually my number 3 choice. So it seems like we planned this, but we didn't.
Yeah, no.
But I completely agree with you. I mean, I think Super 8 has a lot of things going for it. You know, it's like kind of like this familial drama that with like this like kind of nerdy kid who's like wants to be a filmmaker and his dad who's like a policeman or whatever. But then there's also this like Area 51 alien business or who knows what, you know. But it very is much about, you know, nostalgia for like Steven Spielberg movies and that kind of feeling, but also like Americana, you know, back in the day. And I don't know, I get a hint that like it's somewhat autobiographical for like J.J. Abrams, like, and I don't know if that's true or if I'm just making that up or if, you know, I want it to be true, but I don't know, there's just something about the kid in the film that makes me think that like, yeah, that could be J.J. and like maybe this is like kind of like a an interesting take on like him and his father's relationship or something. You know, I'm totally making that up, but I kind of like thinking about it like that, so it makes me excited about more than just like is there or isn't there an alien and like, you know, all that stuff. And also, isn't it produced by Steven Spielberg?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so that just adds on another level of, like, this is gonna be good. Like, it just has to be good.
Yeah. I think it is somewhat autobiographical, because I was reading that he used to make these monster movies when he was a kid with his friends. So there's probably a lot of him in there. I might lose you with my number 3. I think this could be our first split.
Okay.
My number 3 is Kung Fu Panda 2.
Really?
Yes. And here's the only thing I wrote on my notes next to Kung Fu Panda 2 is that Kung Fu Panda is probably my pick for the best non-Pixar CG animated film in the last like decade, I would say. So I'm really excited about it. I was one of those people who, back when the original Kung Fu Panda came out, I missed it in theaters, and I don't want to make the same mistake twice, just because that movie, it's a really gorgeous movie. The colors in it really pop. So I'm excited about seeing these characters and seeing this world back. And I'm guessing from your reaction, Kung Fu Panda 2 was not on your top 5.
No, it's not. But I mean, I did enjoy the first one, and I think the second one looks good. In the same way, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how they like evolve that character, you know, past like, you know, now that he like has all this talent and has realized it and whatever. It's, you know. So, but no, I'm totally into it. It just did not make my top 5.
It's surprising me that, you know, Pixar's offering this year is not on my top 5, but I think we might be talking about that in a little bit. What is your number 2?
So my number 2, and this is something that I feel pretty strongly about, but you're probably going to laugh. This might be on one of your other lists, which is Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, boy.
And there's several reasons that I'm excited about this. Okay, one is that it, in that same kind of nostalgic way that Super 8 makes you feel, you know, like this reminds me of like some really cool, you know, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas kind of movie, not Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but something that is like actually like entertaining and fun and like, you know, it's just like a total escape and awesome. Like it reminds me of like how I felt when Independence Day came out. Like I just wanted to see it and like I didn't even really care what it was about. I was just like, I need to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the poster and I saw Daniel Craig's butt on the poster and I was like, I really need to see that movie.
This is a family show.
No, but I think like Steven Spielberg's involved and I mean Harrison Ford is involved. I want to say George Lucas too, but I think I'm wrong. But and then Jon Favreau directed it, which is kind of ridiculous, but like I just think that it's going to be fun. So I'm really excited about it.
After suffering through Couples Retreat, I hope Jon Favreau only directs movies and stops appearing in them. I have a lot of feelings about Couples Retreat. Don't watch it if you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, you know, Cowboys and Aliens is interesting because I just today realized that Sam Rockwell is in Cowboys and Aliens. I've never seen him in any of the trailers.
Oh yeah, I didn't even know that. That's interesting.
But so I would follow Sam Rockwell to the ends of the earth. So I am kind of curious about that now. My number two is Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which is a remake of this supremely weird and supremely creepy TV movie from 1973. I remember watching it when it was repeated. I was a little kid, and I remember being really creeped out by it. And speaking about people who I would follow to the ends of the earth, one of those people would be Guillermo del Toro, who produced and wrote it. Yeah, it just the trailer, I find the trailer really effective. It was sort of in release limbo for a while. It was supposed to be released in January, but with the whole Miramax studio sale going on, it sort of got bumped for a while, and now they're releasing it in August, so I hope it does not get pushed again, because I've been really, really interested in seeing this movie for a couple months. Well, more than a couple months, for about a year now.
Dang, yeah, no, that movie looks awesome. That was my original number five, as ridiculous as it is, and I was like, yeah, but like, I kind of want to give Friends with Benefits some props, so I scratched it out, and I wrote Friends with Benefits instead. I probably should have gone with my original list, but that's a good number two. That's a really exciting movie. When I watched that trailer, it reminded me of like how giddy and excited to be scared I was when I saw Drag Me to Hell, which is like it's a completely different movie, but in the same way that it was like, do you remember how scared you used to get when you watched scary movies, not gore fests and all the things that scary movies have become today?
Yeah.
And so Don't Be Afraid of the Dark totally made me think like that, you know, and I was like, wow, this is going to be really good. And, you know, if Katie Holmes' character dies, that's like a bonus. You know?
I'm not going to issue a spoiler alert. I know what happens in the end of the original, but I'm not going to say anything.
I think they would probably switch it up.
I don't know. The ending of the TV movie is really iconic. If you're into really creepy TV movies from the 1970s, but it's it's something. The ending of the TV movie is something that has always sort of stuck in my mind, and I feel like maybe I've already said too much. The only thing that really concerns me about Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is I feel like it's going to be a really annoying movie to see with a big crowd.
I can see that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of people talking at the screen, and I feel like, just based on the trailer alone, that movie is going to need, like, silence for a lot of its scares to really work.
Did you actually see that trailer in a theater?
Yes, I did, yeah. I've seen it a couple times in theaters now.
What was it like? Like, were people flipping? I mean, I can't believe they did a minute of blackness.
It's weird because you know how movie theaters are now, where they don't dim the lights all the way until the movie starts?
Oh, yeah, for the trailers. See, I hate that.
It's kind of awkward. When I first saw the trailer, I immediately wanted to show it to some friends, and when I showed it to some friends, I made them turn out all the lights in the room and like put it on in high definition so it filled the whole computer screen. Yeah, seeing it in a theater is kind of stupid because they don't dim the lights all the way, and I feel like that is one of those trailers that to really work, it needs to be dark because of how it begins with that, you know, like you said, it's like a minute of dark with a voice talking. But the trailer plays really well, especially the minute at the end of the trailer of the girl crawling through the bed sheets where you know something is about to happen that's probably not going to be good for anyone, and it finally does. So, I mean, that scare always works whenever I see the movie in theaters, or whenever I see the trailer in theaters.
Right, yeah.
Guillermo del Toro has enough goodwill, and between Pan's Labyrinth and the Hellboy movies, The Orphanage, which is another one of his productions, I really like that movie a lot.
And that's what I was going to say. I actually prefer the movies that he produces more than the movies he directs. I guess I should say I love Pan's Labyrinth, but I'm kind of like, on the two Hellboys. Like, I really want to enjoy them, and like, I do, but they never like go the extra mile of being like awesome. And I don't know if it's a language barrier thing, because I do think that some of the stuff falls flat, maybe because he's not completely fluent, and I don't know, is that even accurate? Or maybe he speaks really well, good English? I don't know. But I love Pan's Labyrinth, and I love how creepy it is, and like just the interesting parts of it, and I love The Orphanage. I thought that movie was so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a slow, like, creepy movie, and that's why I was like, oh, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is going to be really good, you know?
I mean, his Spanish language productions generally are what really draws me to him. The Devil's Backbone is really terrific. This is turning into a Guillermo del Toro love fest. What is your number one most anticipated movie?
So my number one most excited about movie for the summer of 2011 is, without a doubt, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Of course.
Like, I mean, this is just like... This is like, what, like 10 years in the making, you know, all these films that we've watched and all the books that we've read, and we've watched these actors grow up and these characters grow up, and we've watched, and this stuff just get more and more intense and adult, and I was really pleased with part one, and so I'm just so confident and excited that part two is going to be amazing, and I'm not, without spoiling my dreading list, it was almost on both. Because I kind of don't want it to end. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that I'm so excited to see it, but I know that once I do, it's just going to make me really sad because it's over, you know? So it's kind of bittersweet, but I'm just, I mean, the trailers look awesome. I think they're doing a really good job of the way they're showing us everything, and I'm super excited.
Here is where we're going to have a split, but not maybe the one you think. I actually am really excited about this, too. My only beef is that I did not like part one at all. And I think it
really?
Might be a difference in you're a big fan of the books, right?
Yeah, I liked the books, yeah.
Yeah. I stopped reading them after the fourth one, no particular reason why. I just was not in a reading mood, and I own all of them, and I just haven't sat down and read them. But the last movie kind of lost me, and I feel like it's one of those kind of divisions where people that are really into the books and really like the property loved it, and people who just kind of see the movies probably tolerated it. But definitely, I feel like this is the trailer for this that just got released looks absolutely amazing. So my problems with the pacing and the general sluggishness of part one, I feel like watching the two of them together might be really something that redeems, for at least for me, not you, but for me redeems the first part.
Yeah, I could totally understand that. I mean, I think, so that was one of the things that I loved about it, is that I thought that they didn't just speed it up for the sake of it. And at the same time, they didn't break it into two movies just to make money. Like, I think they really dealt with, like, what happens in the books in a pretty good way. And they still changed enough stuff so that it was, you know, cinematically, like, entertaining. But yeah, I mean, it's the part one is kind of a slow, it's kind of a road trip movie in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah.
They're kind of being chased. But yeah, I loved it, so. But wait, well, what's your number one?
I cheated. I have three number ones. But it makes sense thematically, I think. So my number one is just superhero movies, because I am a nerd and I want it known by everyone, or like the four people that will listen to this. I picked three movies. Obviously, I would pick four, but like I said, Thor is ineligible. But my three I picked are X-Men First Class, Green Lantern, and Captain America. And I kind of I could leave Green Lantern behind. I wasn't really that excited about it until I saw the second trailer that was just released a couple weeks ago. More than the Green Lantern, I picked X-Men and Captain America, just because I'm really excited to see what exactly is brought to the table by setting these movies in different eras than we're used to seeing superhero movies be set in. X-Men takes place in the early 60s. I think it's during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And Captain America takes place in the early 40s. And I'm kind of really excited about Captain America, which is weird because that's the one superhero who I kind of don't really care about. The whole thing, I'm worried about it being really like rah-rah America. But the director is Joe Johnston, who made The Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer, yeah. That's okay. So I totally agree with you on that. And I think that he'll do a good job of making it, you know, that era and stuff. But I don't think he's, like, ridiculously capable at, like, you know, crafting an amazing kind of, like, story and connection. And I think what are some of the movies he's done? Like
The Wolfman?
And Jurassic Park 3, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, his resume is not the most inspiring thing, but and I get him confused with Joe Dante a lot, who did, like, Matinee and a couple other movies that were sort of representative of my childhood. But yeah, The Rocketeer, that's a great movie. I just watched it again for the first time in a long time, and it holds up really well. And the thing that strikes me so much about the Captain America trailer is that it really gives me these vibes of The Rocketeer. And I feel like the last couple summers, we've gotten really stiffed as far as superhero movies go. We got Iron Man 2 really early last summer, and that movie was kind of, eh, whatever. And we got Wolverine really early in 2009, and I'm not even going to talk about that one. It's been since 2008. We had Hellboy 2, Iron Man, and Dark Knight. And we also had The Incredible Hulk, which was pretty good. So it's been like a three-year hiatus for a lot of superhero movies coming out. And we have four this summer, which is great. Or if you're me, it's great. And then next summer, I'm really excited about Avengers, Spider-Man, and Batman all in the same summer. But I'll save that for next summer's podcast.
Yeah, So isn't next summer Superman too? Did you say that one?
Superman is, right now, I think it's at the end. They're doing it in December of
2012. Oh, I just assumed it was summer. Yeah,
yeah, it's weird.
And I can't even, Zack Snyder, I mean, really.
Okay. No, I'm still suffering. I still, like, dry heave at night from Sucker Punch. Hey, speaking of dry heaving... Yeah, good. That wrote itself. Yeah. So there are no M. Night Shyamalan movies this summer, and there are no Twilight movies this summer. So I'm wondering how easy it was for you to come up with three movies that you're dreading.
So, I mean, of course it was pretty easy. Like, there's always crap. But I just want to say, to qualify my three, is that... So I you know, I dislike a lot of, like, the larger action movies and stuff like that. Like, I actually feel kind of so-so about the superhero movies. Like, mm-hmm. I was excited about them, and I think they're going to gross, you know, high, which, whatever, we'll get into that. But as far as the movies I'm dreading, like, I think there's very benign movies like Zookeeper and Mr. Popper's Penguins that, like, I could have very easily put on this list. But my list is more focused on as far as, like, what they will become. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear you. I really thought long and hard about Zookeeper, and I feel like that I didn't put that one down because I went with three movies that I will see, but I will probably hate. and I know, like, Zookeeper, I won't probably see it. I'm kind of over talking animal movies. I mean, I actually went to see Cats and Dogs: The Revenge of Kitty Galore last summer. So I think that
masochist.
Yeah, I took a dare from one of my friends last summer who dared me to see every movie that came out, and I did obviously a better than expected job because I did see Cats and Dogs too. But yeah, I went with three movies that I know I will actually see, and I'm dreading the act of physically seeing them, if that makes sense. So I'm gonna let you get the ball rolling. What is your number three most dreaded summer movie?
So my number three is Smurfs because. I mean, it's a Smurfs movie, which could be exciting, right? We all grew up, we loved them, or we just feel nostalgic about them.
Yeah.
But you know that the script is just, oh, is that a cuss word? Make it say Smurf. Oh, is that like a pun? Make it say Smurf. Like, right. Everything is like, oh, Smurf you. Like, oh, what the Smurf's going on? You know, like, whatever. And I just think, I mean, really. And also, Hank Azaria, like, I love him, but he's a movie ruiner. Everything he's in kind of sucks. Especially summer blockbusters, you know, Birdcage not included. But all the summer movies he's in, horrible. Godzilla and America's Sweethearts and everything, they bomb. So that's what I'm putting it out there.
I don't know if I should reveal my number one right now or, or keep going and do my own number three. I'll be surprised if there aren't like seven fart jokes in it. Whole thing looks very Garfield, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Yogi Bear, Hop.
Yeah.
I mean, the Smurfs are cute. The way that they're designed is probably the best you could expect, but I don't know about this whole, like, winding up in New York thing. And then you have Hank Azaria doing Gargamel in like, makeup. It's weird that they're not CGing Gargamel? I don't know. Like, Hank Azaria's only hope is that people, when they review it, they'll say, like, oh, the unrecognizable Hank Azaria. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... Yeah, and Azrael, I don't even want to get started on it, but I will. Why is Azrael a real cat?
Yeah, who makes, like, weird CG faces when it laughs.
Yeah, it's like a real cat half the time, and then whenever it laughs or farts seven times, I'm assuming, it goes to, like, CGI. It just reminds me of that really weird thing they did in Garfield, where Garfield was CG, but Odie was, like, a real dog. I don't get it.
I don't like that. It creeps me out.
And speaking of people who appear frequently in terrible movies, I love you, Neil Patrick Harris, but why? Why do you keep doing this to me? First Beastly and now this? I mean, I get it. People are in these movies because, you know, they can say, I did it for, you know, my kids or my grandkids or whatever, but...
Yeah, that's true. He does have twins.
Yeah, and they have to watch movies, you know?
right, eventually, yeah. They can't watch old episodes of Doogie Howser.
They're going to start with Smurfs and move on to Beastly. My number three was not Smurfs. It is, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. I think this is going to be on everyone's dreaded list. And yet, it will also provide us with so much fodder for jokes and, you know, for years to come.
The presence of James Franco has just sort of, the trailer for this, it honestly seems like it's a spoof trailer for funnyordie.com, you know?
Yeah, I feel like this movie is never going to be released. I feel like it's just a giant prank on us.
Yeah, we're being punked by Hollywood.
Right, right. I mean, like, watching him in the trailer is almost as ridiculous as Denise Richards in that one James Bond movie.
She played Dr. Christmas Jones.
Dr. Christmas Jones, and she's like a bionuclear, like, physicist or something.
I don't know. Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Was anyone asking for another Planet of the Apes movie? Like a prequel?
So it's my number two pick, okay? Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
We're doing this again.
Yeah, I know, clearly. Because it's one of those movies that I'm like, even if this is critically just panned, or an audience is too, but like if it makes like $100 million or whatever, and I think it's being released in like August, so it's not like it's going to have a million things to go up of, which I don't know if everyone knows that, but August is kind of like not necessarily the wasteland, but it's when they give the movies that they don't think are going to do that well, that's when they release them.
Smurfs is coming out in August. Wait a minute, this is odd.
I know, right? But like, I just feel like this movie's going to have a sequel, and it's going to have, you know, like, it's just, they're going to try to reboot this whole franchise thing, and that's like my issue with Smurfs, and that's my issue with this movie, and it's my issue with number one too, but I'll withhold for now.
I just want to throw in that the website for Rise of the Planet of the Apes is apeswillrise.com, which I can't say without smiling.
No, I think that's their point. So they got you. They won.
They won with the title, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. There's a lot of ofs and thes in that title. But anyway, my number two, I hate to do this to you, I really do, is Friends with Benefits for three reasons. One, do we need this so soon after No Strings Attached? And I realize it's a different studio and a different cast. Although weirdly, what's the connection here? Natalie Portman was in No Strings Attached with Ashton Kutcher, and Mila Kunis has slept with both of them in movies and television shows.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Justin Timberlake was on Punk'd with Ashton Kutcher. So really, they're all just best friends, and, you know, they're all having sex together.
Yeah.
At least that's the movie that I want to see.
No comment. But,
I mean, to be fair, like, I, you know, without watching the trailer for Friends with Benefits, I was like, that's one of the movies that I'm dreading because it was already made. You know, it's like David Spade joke of like, I liked this movie before when it was called No Strings Attached. You know, like, it's that thing of like, we've done this, we've seen this, you know, Armageddon and the other one.
Deep Impact.
Yes, Deep Impact, thank you.
And then we had two Volcano movies.
Like, yeah, the two Volcano movies, Dante's Peak and Volcano, and then there was another one, like, 2 years after that or something like that. They just, like, it was always happening, where, like, studios were either trying to catch up with each other or trying to cannibalize someone else's box office, you know, whatever. I think there is going to be enough time in between, and, like, I think No Strings Attached came out in January, which is, like, not a good time to release a movie, you know? So, I mean, it's definitely not going after, like, or maybe it was, going after the, you know, the Valentine's Day crowd, but I think Friends with Benefits is not. So I kind of give it props for that. And also, like, the trailer looks funny. Even if it's just the trailer got me in. And the trailer for No Strings Attached did not look funny at all.
I'll give you, I mean, the trailer for Friends with Benefits is light years beyond the trailer for No Strings Attached. It actually does look better. Maybe I blame that on Patricia Clarkson, just because whenever she shows up in a movie, I smile almost as much as I do when I say apeswillrise.com.
Right, right. That's true. She does have that effect, though. Yeah, and I got excited the second I saw her, too.
Yeah, but I feel like it's so soon after that other movie, and it's one of those movies that you know the synopsis. I mean, I'll go on a podcast and beg for forgiveness if I'm wrong, but I'm sure it ends with them realizing that they're madly in love with each other, and then they should actually take a shot at a real relationship. And I just feel like Justin Timberlake, I'm not buying him as anyone other than Justin Timberlake yet.
Right, and so I completely agree with that, but I think in this situation, he's just being himself. So, like, this is the one case where, like, I'm like, I'd watch that. He's, like, being kind of cute and, like, wearing nice clothes and sometimes not wearing nice clothes. Like, interacting with Mila Kunis, who's, like, awesome, and I feel like she can make anyone feel at ease and, like, really cool. I don't know. Like, at least she makes me feel that way. I don't even know her. And, you know what I mean? So I feel like it's actually, I just looked it up. It's being released in July because Justin is also going to be in Bad Teacher, which is coming out in June.
That's right. Bad Teacher, which almost wound up on my excited list.
Yeah, right? Like, it sounds interesting.
The trailer is really funny. I think the trailer is funny. I appreciate that they're going, like, for a hard R rating on it, you know.
Yeah, I respect when movies do that. They're like, we're not fucking around, you know?
Literally.
Say that, right? Does that just give this podcast an R rating?
It's okay. I'll warn my mom in advance.
Okay.
So, I think you already know what my number one is, because my number one was your number three. So, I'm going to let you close out this passage with your number one.
So, my number one is, going in the theme of rebooting franchises or franchises in general, is Spy Kids 4. And I should say that this is a very benign movie, and it's not that big of a deal, but I hate Jessica Alba. There, I said it. And I'd hate that Robert Rodriguez likes Jessica Alba, because if she becomes his muse, I'll never see another Robert Rodriguez movie again. And the other part of that is that I don't remember us ever asking for number two and number three, and I saw them in theaters, and they were not good. I do not want to see this one in theaters. And the third thing about this is that the kid in this movie is Jessica Alba's baby. Oh. So it's really like Spy Woman who just had a baby. So I kind of think it's annoying that they're even cashing in on this whole Spy Kids thing, which, like, is a little too late to cash in on.
Yeah, so, I didn't know that. That's really weird.
Yeah, but what's worse is that, like, I read why they made this movie kind of thing, and Robert Rodriguez is like, oh, she came over to my house, and, like, she was, like, fumbling to get out of the car with her baby, and I thought, that'd be a funny movie. And I was like, so you wrapped it around Spy Kids? Like, why didn't you just make, like, Bad Mommy or something, you know, like, or some, I don't know, whatever. And also Jeremy Piven is the villain, which is like, what? That's just ridiculous.
Are Antonio Banderas and Carla Gugino coming back?
No, that's the thing. I don't think it has anyone else from the other movies.
What?
That's why it's so absurd. And like, those other kids are like, they're like adults now, so it can't be, you know, can't be spy adults. That's just spies.
This is so weird.
Yeah, so stupid.
I just feel like you'd think that with the success of Taylor Lautner that he would make a Shark Boy and Lava Girl too.
Yeah, clearly. Shark Man.
Oh, here we go again. Before you get sidetracked, I just remembered that Conan the Barbarian is being released this summer, and I wonder if it's too late to revise my dreaded list.
Yeah, that's another movie that's being just, like, quietly released in August. I mean, they'll probably blow it up, but, like, I'm not thinking that's going to be so good.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to take off work to see that. It's going to be great. So we're now at the point where we're going to do our predictions for the top five highest grossing summer movies. But before we do that really quickly, I just wanted to say it's too late to change them, so don't scratch anything out over there. But the Washington Post had a poll online of their website visitors, which summer movies they were really excited about seeing. I wonder if you can guess what number one was as of today with 28% of the vote.
Harry Potter.
Very good. Now, here's another trivia question for you. What is number two with 17% of the vote? And I'll give you a hint. It's a movie that hasn't even come up in our conversation yet.
Probably Hangover 2.
Wow, you're on fire.
Yes. See, that's the thing. That's why I think my growth is going to be really good, because I think I'm tapping into middle America. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, here's kind of a twist for you. Number three with 15% is a movie that sort of caught me off guard, but maybe not you, since it was one of your five excited.
I'm going to say Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah, Cowboys and Aliens. So, and rounding out the rest of it is Pirates of the Caribbean is 9%. Transformers Dark of the Moon, is that what it's called? Is 7%?
Yeah, it's just like that Pink Floyd album, only not.
Transformers has 7%, X-Men First Class is 6%, Bridesmaids has 6%, and everything else has 1% to 2%, which is kind of surprising because I would have thought people would be excited about Cars, but maybe not, because why would you be excited about Cars?
Yeah, I think, so that's a pretty good list. I think it lines up pretty closely to my gross list, but not exactly. But I think what's important is that kids can't vote in that, right? So, like, the parents are going to see Cars too. They're going to have to, but they're not that excited about it. You know, like, it's not, like, one of the things they're going to answer on a poll.
Yeah.
You know, and Kung Fu Panda, likewise. And some other movies, too. I think there's a lot of, like, 13-year-old boys that will go see these movies by themselves. You know, these huge blow-em-up kind of action movies. I'm actually surprised that Judy Moody and the Nut Bummer Summer isn't on.
But my mom, if my mom voted, that would be her number one. She's very excited about Judy Moody. There were actually a couple movies that wound up on my excited about and dreading list, and then I figured they just canceled each other out, so I didn't list them on either. One of them being Cars 2, just because I'm dreading it, but I'm excited because the short at the beginning of Cars 2 is Toy Story.
Right, right, yeah.
So, I mean, if nothing else, that'll be fun. But I'm looking at Cars and I'm wondering, was there anything about the first Cars movie that left you hoping they went back to that world for another story?
No, nothing. Absolutely yeah. Nothing. And yeah. So I think some of the redeeming qualities of this one will just be, like, Michael Caine, yeah. You know, which he's great. But and, you know, the James Bond illusions and all of that kind of British spy stuff that they've done.
Michael Caine didn't record any voiceover for this. They just took dialogue from the Cider House Rules. So that explains why his car character is obsessed with abortion. No, that's a bad joke. That's terrible. I'm going to leave that
in. It's like really adult. You know, like Pixar's been moving forward with every movie.
Yeah, definitely. Transformers also is another movie that I contemplated putting on both lists, just because the second movie was so horrible. But I cannot watch a trailer for these Transformers movies and not feel like a little kid. Because, I mean, if they had the technology to make this kind of thing when I was a kid, I would have been a very happy child.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the reasons that, like, I kind of hate these movies, because I'm mad that I didn't get to experience them with, like, that amount of wonder of, like, I don't care if this isn't that good, like, I just love it, like, stuff is blowing up, I'm seeing things, it looks real, you know, like, because, yeah, we definitely did not have that technology when we were growing up to see any of that stuff. I mean, I remember, like, the original, like, Spider-Man and Captain America movies that I watched, like, my friends had them on VHS.
Yeah.
They were, like, made-for-TV things where, like, Captain America threw his shield, and, like, 5 minutes later, his shield would, like, come back, and it was, like, really fake and bad-looking.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's that part, which is, like, I'm glad that they can do this, you know, that filmmaking has gotten that far. And then there's the other part that's, like, why the fuck is Michael Bay directing this shit, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, I don't know who else would do it.
One other movie I want to mention before we get into the box office, actually, is a movie that not many people might know about called One Day, which, again, almost wound up on both my anticipated and my dreaded lists. It's kind of a small movie based on a pretty popular book, I guess, and it has Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgis in it, and I guess they're playing British people who meet in the 1980s, and then the movie charts one day a year in their lives, the same day each year over the course of like 15 or 20 years or something. The trailer for that, I feel like you might need to shame me into reconsidering it in a public forum, because the trailer kind of got me.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Anne Hathaway's accent and Jim Sturgis's wigs are horrible.
Right, both are equally horrible.
Yes, but they can't, again, they cancel each other out. But but I'm thinking this might not be the total chunk of cheese that it looks like, just because the director is Lone Scherfig, who directed An Education. But I think that the movie might not be as horribly cheesy as it looks. But I mean, it does look cheesy. But I have to admit that while watching the trailer, when that One Republic song kicks in at the end, it had me totally.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've only heard people talk about the book and how they think the movie is going to ruin the book, or, yeah, you know, whatever. But I think if it does stay true to the book and people seem to love it and think that it's really good and that it's actually not as sappy as the trailer makes it look,
yeah,
I think it could either do really well and get really good reviews and kind of word of mouth pick up and stuff like that, or it could be like a, why were they advertising this movie one way when it's clearly not that, it's not all that, you know? But, you know, personally, I kind of find, like, it's an interesting experiment to kind of revisit these characters, you know, every year or whatever, and I think it's interesting, you know, to watch an actor, like, age on screen, not even if the wig is bad and stuff like that. I think it's, you know, it'd be cool for them to play it. But, I mean, it looks interesting. I think they have pretty decent chemistry. I mean, you know, who wouldn't with Jim Sturgis? I think he's pretty charming, and she's amazing. You know, I used to hate her so much, like Princess Diaries and all that stuff. And I was very late to the game with The Devil Wears Prada and stuff, but I actually have, she's come around, like, I've come around, I really like her now.
Yeah, Rachel getting married is really terrific. She probably should have won the Oscar for that. And Jim Sturgis, I do find him really charming. I may or may not own 21 on Blu-ray, just for him. So. I've been shamed enough, though. Let's do the box office thing. What is your number five pick for the highest box office gross of the summer?
So my number five is Cars 2.
Interesting. I went a different route. I actually picked Kung Fu Panda 2. Yeah. My logic is only because the first Cars grossed, I think, $240 million when it was released in 2006. And that's not, you know, that's not up to what Pixar has been performing at recently. Toy Story last summer made over $400 million domestically. I'm just going on the fact that Cars is going to attract more boys, whereas Kung Fu Panda has the ability, I guess, to attract more boys and girls.
Yeah, that's a good point. My number four is Transformers 3, Dark of the Moon.
My number four is Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever the subtitle of that movie is. What is it?
I think it's On Stranger Tides or something.
Yeah, that's it. See, that's why I can't remember it, because it's crazy.
Yeah, because they're all kind of stupid and arbitrary.
Yeah. So what's your number three?
My number three is Pirates 4.
Oh, okay. So we're doing this again.
Yeah. What's your number three?
My number three, I have a feeling, will be your number two. My number three is The Hangover Part 2.
That is.
Wow, okay. So your number two is The Hangover 2. My number two is Harry Potter 7.2, which I have will be your number one.
That's my number one, yeah, Harry Potter. Wow, this is weird.
Yeah, I went with, we're tying it back together, because I actually went with Transformers 3 for my number one, just because the last movie made over $400 million, and Harry Potter, the Deathly Hallows Part 1, made $295 million. So I just kind of went with the last movie to make more money, and that was Transformers. I mean, I think Harry Potter has a shot at making more money this summer than anything else, just because it's the last one, and it's going to be one of those events that you have to go see. So
yeah, I thought of it more as like just a huge event, and it's also being released on like the sweet spot weekend of July 15th. You know, it's when Dark Knight was released. It's when, I think it's when the last, no, it's not when the last Harry Potter was released, because that was like around November, right? But it's a very, you know, popular, like, movie going weekend or week, or, you know, it's probably a Wednesday through Sunday thing. But yeah, so I thought that was one of the reasons. But also, I mean, it's Harry freaking Potter, you know, like I said, it's like 10 years in the making. It's going to be intense. It's going to be awesome. I think is most interesting about both of our gross lists is that no superhero movies.
Yeah. I think they're going to do well, but they're going to get lost in this glut of sequels, because all of mine, and I think all of yours, were all sequels.
Yeah, all sequels.
I think out of all of them, though, the one with the biggest shot of being in the top five, knocking something out, would be X-Men, right?
Really?
Yeah, just because that, I mean, looking at how much money that, especially the third one, made, I think Wolverine pulled in quite a bit on its opening weekend. Neither of those are movies that people really admit to liking.
It was really bad word of mouth, too. It still did really well.
Yeah. I mean, all things considered, if they were actually good movies, they would have been huge. But they weren't, so they were just pseudo huge. But I feel like X-Men was on my top five list for a while as far as grosses go, and I kept moving it back until it just completely disappeared. I think Harry Potter has a really good chance of being the highest grossing movie of the summer, just because, like I said, the first part of The Deathly Hallows grossed just under $300 million, and it came out in November.
Right.
So there's no telling what what this might do being released in the middle of July. So neither of us are excited about The Hangover Part 2, which a lot of people are. Actually, I'm going to put you on the spot with one last prediction, speaking of The Hangover. This is something I try to predict myself every time I go see a Todd Phillips movie, and that is, how early in The Hangover Part 2 will the first usage of the word faggot occur?
I'm going to say, like, first 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
You're giving him a lot of credit. I'm going to say that he's not going to outdo the first Hangover, and I think that one came at around the 10-minute mark, so I'm going to go 22 minutes.
Okay.
I'm going to do 22 minutes. So at the end of the summer, we will reconvene, perhaps, and we'll probably be slightly disappointed about one or two movies.
Yeah, right.
Don't be afraid of the dark. But maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised about something else, like Smurfs. Or Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I hope that the Rise of the Planet of the Apes is the best comedy to come out this year.
It might be this year's Airbender in terms of how ridiculously funny it is. And that's going to wrap up this episode of Scorncast. Once again, you can visit The Roundtable at www.theroundtableonline.com. You can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com. And you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. Our very special guest has been Ghostface Milla. Our very special theme music is by Bug. And we all hope you have a not-bummer summer at the movies.